terror is a bunch of bullshit. Just a poor excuse for you to use up on your bullets. How much money does it take to really make a full clip? 9-11 building 7, did they really pull it? And a bunch of other cover-ups. Your child's future was the first to go with budget cuts. If you think that hurts, then wait, here comes the uppercut. The school was garbage in the first place, that's on the up and up. Keep you at the bottom, but tease you with the upper crust. You get it, then they move it, so you never keeping up enough. If you turn on TV, all you see is a bunch of what the f***. Dude is dating so-and-so, blabbering about such and such. And that ain't Jersey Shore, homie, that's the news. And these the same people supposed to be telling us the truth. Limbaugh is a racist, Glenn Beck is a racist. Gaza Strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't say shit. That's why I ain't vote for next one either. I'm a part of the problem, my problem is I'm peaceful. And I believe in the people. Yeah!
It's so bad.
Heard it, but if we know better, then we probably deserve it. Jihad is not holy war, where's that in the worship? Murdering is not Islam, and you are not observant. And you are not a Muslim. Israel, don't take my side, cause look how far you've pushed them. Walk with me into the ghetto, this where all the bitch went. Complain about the liquor store, but what you drinking liquor for? Complain about the gloom, but when you pick a broom up, just listen in the pot, ain't gon' make it stop. A rebel in your doubts, ain't gon' make it out. If you don't become an actor, you'll never be a factor. Pills with million side effects, take them when the pain's felt. Wash them down with diet soda, killing off your brain cells. Crooked banks around the world, we're glad to give a loan to. So if you ever miss a payment, they can take your home away.
Worse than all the violence. Fear is such a weak emotion, that's why I despise it. We scared of almost everything, afraid to even tell the truth. So scared of what you think of me, I'm scared of even telling you. Sometimes I'm like the only person I feel safe to tell it to. I'm locked inside a cell in me, I know that there's a jail in you. Consider this your belling out, so take a breath and hell a few. My screams is finally getting free, my thoughts
it's
is finally so yelling
down.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Good morning, CKLN listeners. It is
It is Monday, the 28th day of March 2011. You're listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening here on CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM, online in Rogers Cable Box 947. And I apologize to you folks out there. I usually get a drop on the news, especially when it comes to the weather, a little earlier than most of you folks, simply because I happen to be outside early to get here to do my show as your host, BK, a.k.a. VJ, here on a freezing cold Monday. And it's insane out there. It is extremely cold. It is insanely cold. It is minus 7, minus 8, minus 10. It's the kind of cold that creeps in everywhere and doesn't let go while it's strangling you. And so I'd like to say to CKLN listeners out there who listen to shows Mondays and Thursdays, who are aware of these issues and aware of the issue of global warming, the threat of global warming and or climate change being used to take away our living standards. Let's get active on that. When everybody around us can see clear evidence that for the last 4 years it's been colder, and they're particularly ticked off about that now, and there's a federal election that just got announced here in Canada where, my mistake out there for you listeners, I thought they were going to jack us with a fake, you know, 6-week election campaign that'll be full of spin and deception as all the parties, you know, look like they're trying to do their jobs without actually saying enough to galvanize the support of Canadians and leave us apathetic and screwed over our choices. I thought they would jack us with a quick 6-week election campaign. I apologize, listeners out there in CKLN Radio listener land. They're actually jacking us with a 5-week election campaign. Almost no time for anyone to run for MP. Almost no time for people to get into the issues, to discuss them with their family and friends, and to make sure they make the best choices. And so, you know, we got to look at what things like this mean. Prime Minister, the people have hated for years. I'm now coming out on the attack with the, you know, the coalition spin. You know, little balls that bounce really, really, you know, sticky, and they bounce really, really crazy when you drop them on the ground like a hyperball. That's what Harper's, you know, sort of coalition losers attack plan, which I'll get into in a second, is about. But either way, tons of spin right out of the gates for our elections. Why is the system doing this? Well, I had to tell you something. A caller from the Alex Jones Show talking about how our armies and police are expected to stop potential martial law taking place. They may not. And this gentleman thinks they won't. It's important for us to hear these things to get in the mood to get active.
I'm a veteran of the U.S. Army and the United States Marine Corps, and I just been speaking a lot with sheriffs in the county surrounding the area. I live here in North Carolina, and I travel a lot. I'm a member of the media, and I travel and fly extensively. And when they started the Speedos protest at TSA some months ago, and have yet, thank God, to go through a full body scanner or to receive a pat down. But I'm constantly in talk with military people and law enforcement of all ranks and sizes all over the country as I go about my business. And a couple of things that brought in some good clarification for me I'd like to share with you and everybody else is, you know, there's a lot of people under the illusion that the military and law enforcement, that there's going to be a mass amount of people that will side with freedom and liberty and truth when, you know, push comes to shove. And I just wanted to dispel that illusion. A conversation I had 2 days ago with the second in command at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. I called him in regards to the report of the Marines being sent out to Libya, and I asked him about that, and I asked him from the Universal Code of Military Justice standpoint, which requires Marines to stand down against illegal orders. Now, I was asking him, how could he, in good conscience, having sworn to defend the Constitution, send troops to Libya, which was obviously an illegal order, being that, Obama, of course, bypassed Congress and went and had a unilateral attack on Libya under the auspices of the United Nations. And Sergeant Major refused at all to even mention the word U.S. Constitution. He refused to engage me in any kind of intelligent conversation. And he just said that, look, I've got a commander-in-chief. I do whatever the commander-in-chief says. I told him he was a traitor and a coward, and he was a domestic enemy of the Constitution by failing to uphold his duties as a Marine and resist illegal orders. And I just wanted to leave you with that. And I spoke to another recruit just out of basic. I handed him a copy of the Constitution and Bill of Rights, and he said he's never read it in his life. and that, of course, they no longer teach the Constitution in any shape, form, or fashion in the military, but I appreciate you giving me time.
We must understand the politics of our community, and we must know what politics is supposed to produce. We must know what part politics play in our lives. And until we become politically mature, we will always be misled, led astray, or deceived, or maneuvered into supporting someone politically who doesn't have the good of our community at heart.
And that's right, folks. This is a reminder out there from your host, BK, a.k.a. VJ, here on a Monday, a cold Monday morning, the 28th day of March, 2011, from Malcolm X, you know, with respect to understanding politics, something that's not a bad idea for us to do at this time, especially when it says here, so hopefully you folks understood and got that clip out there, that this gentleman who's been politically active, who's basically identified himself to the show and identified one of the people in the military he's spoken to, among several, he says, has. You know, they're not just going to automatically refuse illegal orders because they're nice people any more than the rest of us will automatically risk our jobs just because we're by and large nice people. What'll end up happening is the same thing that always ends up happening. Every time countries, have corrupt leaders that declare martial law, which is that the police forces, military forces, intelligence agencies, and others will more than likely enforce it. And we saw a little taste of that here in Toronto at the G20 summit last summer. It's not like they acted like that all the time. It's not like they took their license to act crazy and leverage it outside of that very, very much. Although I am noticing there's a lot more unmarked police cars out there. There's a lot more unmarked police vans, unmarked police cars. I saw a guy pulled over by somebody, a cop, looked like in a Hyundai accent, a few weeks ago. And I was just like, oh man, this is getting crazy. Even though, there's a lot of hand-wringing about what happened at the G20 summit in June of 2010 here in Toronto, a lot of the policies that were put in place, including the use of unmarked vans and so on, still took place. We have a caller here, though. So what I'm going to do is bring this caller on the air and see how they feel. All right, that caller has just hung up for whatever reason or another. But the bottom line is that you can feel free to call in. Here we go. Sorry, folks, give me one sec. Good morning, caller. You're on the air. Hello, caller. You are on the air. Hello?
You cannot serve two bosses at once. You know that. If you want me to listen to the voice, switch off the so-called music at the back.
Okay.
You can't have both go in because nobody can hear anything.
I apologize, sir. I'm actually...
You should have known better. You've been broadcasting for so long.
I have, and here's the thing. There's currently only one headphone or one earphone working on my headphone, so it's hard for me to tell the levels.
This is your problem. You iron out your problem. But if you want a listenership, you must let us listen and not just be confused. Okay?
I appreciate that, sir. Thank you.
Right. See to it, please.
Okay, sir. Thank you. All right, well, it's good to know we have some angry and passionate listeners who do want to listen to the show and the content that we cover here on this show, and so I appreciate the tip there. That's right, there's always little things kind of messed up around here periodically. When we were in danger of losing the radio station here at CKLN, which we are not completely out of danger yet, but when we were in danger of losing the radio station here, we were all upset, and we tried to fight hard to save it, and now that we have it, we can go back to complaining about what's going on. So, I think the caller's, a caller's back. Caller, you're on the air. Hello? All right, so I'm gonna get into this in a second here, but I do appreciate the tip on the music and the levels. Only have one headphone working right now. I cannot really hear my voice or the music very, very well, but I will keep it at a low level as best I can see it. And so I do apologize for that. I am trying to play through the pain here on the morning. But the reason I played that clip of that gentleman there is to illustrate the point that if we have any fantasies about what may happen with respect to our police and military and intelligence agents and ones in America and ones in other countries standing down, they generally follow orders to keep their jobs. And if those orders are patently unconstitutional or violate the primary document and source of laws in a given country, like ones that existed in countries around the world, as long as that order is given by a commanding officer, many of them will not be able to. Many of them will choose not to disobey those orders, because obviously, how are they going to get legal recourse if they do decide to buck the system, become a whistleblower, decide to challenge the orders they're given or refuse them outright? And so, what does that mean? Does that mean we're all completely screwed? No, it just means that we can't, try and get in the mood by making up the most positive fantasies possible. And there's a whole bunch of them out there. There's the Zeitgeist movement, and there's just being nice to people. So, for example, if I come here on the radio and I'm all in a happy-go-lucky mood, and I say to you folks, don't worry about it, folks. I can tell. Our cops are decent people, and everyone's decent, and everyone's nice, and there's a global consciousness awakening, and so we're all going to wake up one day, and they're going to wake up one day, and if it ever comes down to it, then the people in positions of power will all make the right calls, because that's what I fundamentally believe about human nature. Well, even if you believe that, it's not healthy, because it's a fantasy based on what else you could be doing, which is getting active in the information war. Because essentially that's what it's going to take. It's going to take people getting active in the information war when it doesn't threaten their jobs. If the doctors and nurses don't like martial law, then they should advocate against martial law and against policies and war on terror policies that lead that. If the cops out there don't like their kids getting messed up by vaccines, or their wives or their husbands getting messed up by big pharmacide medications, then they should advocate on those issues. And sometimes people think you have to be an expert to talk about something. Well, it's simply not true. You just have to get informed by what experts by experts who are whistleblowing to kind of get a clear picture of what you should say on certain issues. So, in a nutshell, I'm trying to make the point here. I'm trying to make the point here for listeners out there that there are memes out there. There's the Zeitgeist movement. There's a ton of other New Age stuff that'll encourage us to think as optimistically as possible, to be nice, to act like we're being nice, to act like it's important for people out there, to like us, and for us to like them, and for us to put on the most positive face possible with respect to what we know about the world and the plans of the New World Order, the handful of banking families and secret societies and think tanks and network of super rich oligarchs working together worldwide to create international institutions for global governance, a permanent scientific dictatorship with an orderly, managed, and carefully reduced population to serve them and their children going forward, leveraging the technology they got us to help build them. So that's one of the, there's so many memes out there to subtly redirect our energies. And I'll tell you how they do it. There's an article here from Yahoo News Canada, pretty mainstream news, organization, news source here. Fear, the main factor in Harper's stump speeches. That's right. Prime Minister Stephen Harper, it says here from Burnaby, B.C., Prime Minister Stephen Harper's speeches in the early days of the federal election campaign could give Canadians the shivers. Harper paints a dire picture of war and financial calamity around the world, a teetering Canadian economy, and what he says is the, quote, terrible price to pay, unquote, if the three opposition parties band together to usurp a conservative minority. Harper spent the second day of his campaign Sunday once again sounding the alarm that his rivals were bent on overthrowing a future conservative minority. Aside from a description of measures his party introduced in the rejected federal budget, Harper has not yet mentioned new party policies. Quote, and this is Stephen Harper speaking, so for you folks out there, you have to picture me speaking with the cold, dead eyes of a shark. Canada is the closest thing. The global recovery, remember, friends, is very fragile. Yes, Canada is doing relatively well, very well, but a sea of trouble is lapping at our shores. Disaster in the Pacific. This is my Harper impression. Disaster in the Pacific. Chaos in the Middle East. Debt problems in Europe, and of course, some very serious challenges south of the border. He told a crowd of about 350 at Japanese Cultural Center, Canada is the closest thing in the world that this world has to an island of stability and security. What would the world think if we were to suddenly now head off on some whole new high-tax economic direction led by a reckless coalition without a coherent program or even basic national principles? And he delivered nearly the same speech earlier in the day in Brampton, Ontario, where he roamed around the stage preacher style. So you can see the fear out there being used to subvert our ability to make a rational decision, at least in the eyes of the Harper campaign, as they would prefer to spin it. And you know, what's amazing is that Harper is actually arguing against the actions potentially of our elected representatives here in Canada. And he's saying that if he wins a minority government, as he is likely to do, then the other parties will form a coalition to try and take power away from his minority government, and that would be a not nice thing to do. And so because of that, we should vote for the Harper government and give them a majority so they can govern the country more effectively. Now, the amount of spin that goes into this campaign that we have to decipher, as opposed to just argue one side or the other of, is patently insane. Harper is not only arguing that there is some threat by the other parties out there to form a coalition minority government to wrest power away from whatever victory that he and his party have, he's saying that these people's views can't possibly be valid, that there is no reason that our politicians, who are normally fairly staid and docile, would try and attack his leadership, and that this would be undemocratic in a country where he wants to rule like an autocrat. So the do you like the coalition or not idea is what's been launched into the election debatosphere, especially as of this weekend and especially this week. And people will be asked to decide on whether or not they want a coalition government that that argues with itself, that's ineffective, and that's giving itself or each other handouts to satisfy its core base, whether it's the Bloc Québécois in Quebec or the Liberals or NDP across the rest of the Canada, or Stephen Harper, who was recently found in contempt of Parliament again. So we are up against we are stuck between a rock and a hard place when it comes to this election. And you can see there's a ton of other factors that go into this. Canada's first social media election is on, but will people vote? This is from Bill Curry in the Globe and Mail from today. And it says here, are 140 characters enough to make or break a federal election campaign? So not only do we have an election, not only is it a five-week jack of an election, but, you know, as I've been talking about on the show for some time now, we are being encouraged by our mass media, who are doing a better job than ever of promoting protests and revolutions and giving people, mainstream people at home, instructions on how to do this than they ever have before, when they never used to talk about activism or protesting or the idea of people rebelling against the establishment. Now we're being sold revolt hit the streets like, you know, about 300,000-400,000 did in London on the 26th of March. Allow the newspapers and police and other and government agencies and authorities to say there was violence there, so we had to step up our security, and then watch the back and forth crackdown go, and then have all the controversy after that happens about the right to protest and the actions of police, and completely ignore all the politicians and the policies. And so that's what happened with respect to the G20 for the most part. And that appears to be what's happened with the protest model being so heavily promoted by the media, including MSNBC News and other mainstream news organizations celebrating what was happening in London in a bizarre way. And, of course, this Globe Mail article on the use of Twitter and Bill Curry starting off by saying, are 140 characters enough to make or break a federal election, a campaign? Well, you know what they're enough to do? They are enough to simply confuse us. They are enough to simply confuse us by giving us this way of communicating that doesn't allow us to challenge your propaganda very easily. It doesn't give us the patience or time to. So essentially, it'll be coalition is silly. Would much rather have a strong leader at this unstable time in history. That's a typical one-tweet kind of thing we got to do. But we got to go beyond this because I got to tell you something. I'm going to take you to a clip from Whitley Strieber and Nick Bryant on Dreamland Radio. You know what? They're pushing that. I'll take you to that in a second here. I'm going to finish this article on the Twitten for a second here. It says here, and this is how Canadians feel about Twitter and social networking, and why I'm so scared of it, because it's the type of thing where if we think that our political discourse is fairly impotent now and fairly placid and docile and not especially advanced, then imagine it run through the Twitter filter, and you'll find out, you know, where it could go. So I'm going to take you back to this article from Bill Curry in today's Globe and Mail. The defeat of the Conservative government unleashed a torrent of political tweets. By mid-afternoon Sunday, more than 14,000 tweets had been sent out during the first day and a half of the campaign related to the election or Canadian politics. With a potential reach of more than 16 million people, it was a dramatic spike from the less than 2,000 tweets on the same topics the weekend before. If there was ever a question before, it's clear now. Canada's first social media election is underway. And now, with statements like that, declarative, authoritative statements like that by the media that we all know are reaching thousands, if not millions of Canadians, the rest of us will feel obligated to go along with this and play along with this. And if I want to do any sort of work on this issue, I've got to get more active on my Twitter account. And we all feel like this is the place where it's going to be decided, and conversations outside this aren't necessarily natural. Taken to the streets in the InfoWar isn't necessarily natural. Putting up posters, handing out flyers, sharing DVDs, passing on web links, writing blogs, exposing lies, all that stuff is natural. What we should be doing is we should be tweeting like maniacs. And the article admits here, it says here, the raw comments on Twitter, the raw commentary on Twitter is often anonymous and occasionally obscene. For parties with the proper tracking software, what potential voters say on social media can provide a real-time feedback on the campaign to find out what's working and what isn't. Quote, that kind of information to me would be golden for a campaign, said Mark Blevis, an Ottawa-based digital public affairs strategist. Mr. Blevis provided the above-mentioned stats to the Globe and Mail. At a high level, Mr. Blevis said, tracking Twitter lets campaigns know what issues are resonating with voters. The parties could also drill down deeper and reach out potential supporters. The revolution. Barack Obama's 2008 presidential campaign is seen as the watershed moment for social media in politics. Well, it's been a couple of years, folks. What does that tell us based on what Mr. Obama has done, which is what Bush did, but a continuation making it even worse? Mr. Obama's team used the online tools to make their candidate more relatable, while at the same time organizing local online groups with the goal of identifying people who would be more physically engaged in the campaign by volunteering or donating money. New Calgary Mayor Naheed Nenshi also won praise for using social media in the right ways, being genuine and responsive online rather than simply spewing news releases. And it's true. If you are going to echo the propaganda on Twitter, not only can you echo it, you can say the exact right things on Twitter with just enough control, just enough time to make your case. So it's a dangerous medium. But you can see where this is going, folks, with respect to our ability to control our political system and or lack thereof. But on that note, I'd like to just go into a little bit more of an indictment of the media for a second here. Whitley Strieber and Nick Bryant, who wrote a book on the Franklin scandal, the pedophile cover-up out of Nebraska, where there's basically an international pedophile rings and child pornography rings that operate around the world that are involved in Satanism and intelligence agency mind control. This book is in the hands of several celebrities and journalists. Let's hear what they're doing with it before we decide to trust them.
What the Franklin scandal is, it's a diagnosis of a disease in our society, a malignancy festering in our society. It's any time that the government is aiding and abetting child abuse, it's a disease, it's a malignancy. And I know it's a very hard message for people to get their minds around, but if they read my book, they'll see it. But
oh, yes.
You can't cure a disease until it's diagnosed. And I think that my book provides a definitive diagnosis for the disease. And now it's up to people that are reading my book, to be part of the cure, because the mainstream media has been woefully neglectful in covering my book. I've gotten my book to... I've got like a mind-boggling list of people who have my book. It's
some of them aren't going to cover it because they're covering their own crimes.
It's really Oprah has my book, Nancy Grace has my book, Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow, their senior producers have my book, Geraldo, Dr. Phil, Amy Goodman, Tavis Smiley. I mean, I could just go on and on and on and on, and none of them will touch it, this story, and which I find a little disillusioning. After all, we aren't talking about the abuse of children. Everybody seems to be against the abuse of children, but when you show that there's a large pedophile network that the government has aided and abetted, they don't seem to want to talk about that. Even though they'll talk about the guy who's smoking crack and living in a trailer that picked up a 14-year-old
Absolutely. That story will go everywhere, but not the story about what's happening behind closed doors at a house in an exclusive part of Washington, D.C.
Actually, we're so far removed from any kind of government, even your federal governments, they can't tell us the truth now on anything. They don't even expect to check. In fact, that's why they hire the marketers, to make sure they change the wording and so on, to get the public to go along with any new thing that's rammed down your way.
So what'll end up happening, folks, and we are back again. That was Whitney Strieber with author Nick Bryant, talking about how many journalists have his book well-documented, well-sourced, citing lots of legal sources, sources in the FBI and the police, court cases, admissions, and so on. Is in the hands of several prominent journalists, and it reveals an ongoing satanic pedophile network operating in the U.S. and internationally, and they won't touch it. They can't cover it. And then you have Alan Watt there from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com talking about how governments can't tell us the truth, and they never tell us the truth. It's just not even part of their nature now. And so you got to figure, if they generally don't and can't tell us the truth, because that is the nature of the beast, then what is going on with respect to the election and all the political parties who are trying to decide it here? Back to this article here, because I think it is really important to figure out the whole Twitter thing and how we're being taught to discuss this election here. Conservative MPs increasingly took to Twitter over the past year, a loosening of the tight message control the party's known for under leader Stephen Harper. It's no secret that Twitter feeds from politicians like Tony Clement are must-reads for journalists and political junkies. The former industry minister is famously known for tweeting a government policy, such as overturning a CRTC decision on usage-based billing on the internet. There are an estimated 17 million Canadians on Facebook, but fewer than 5 million on Twitter. The might of Facebook, particularly as it grows popularity with older Canadians, means parties must ensure their sites are current and engaging. But the immediacy of Twitter, combined with the speed that it can transmit snapshots and news stories, links electronically from anyone, anywhere via smartphone, adds a new intensity to this election. But again, how do you challenge the propaganda? If all you want to do is repeat it, I mean, who has the patience out there? If you're on Twitter, if you're a fan of Twits, do you have the patience to listen to, say, a 13 or 14 Twit explanation? You know, that's about 1,000 characters. I'd say that's, you know, a couple of hundred words, or, you know, maybe, yeah, maybe 200-300 words to explain something. Who has the patience for that? You know, what does the format allow that? The answer is not really. But it says here, the parties will slowly be tracking the tweets of the various candidates and their staffers ready to pounce on the first sign of a slip-up. Quote, you have a brainwave and bang, it's out there in the public domain, said Tom Flanagan, who has directed past conservative campaigns which candidates were urged not to blog in order to stay out of trouble. There it is. I see it as a problem, but Twitter is so new that it hasn't really been tested. Maybe the one saving grace is there's only 140 characters. There's perhaps a limited amount of damage you can do saying something stupid on Twitter. Or smart, for that matter, and the definition of smart is certainly suspect. But, you know, but because then how do you deconstruct things like reckless coalition strategy is Harper's own here? This is from Stephen Chase, Jane Tabor, John Ibbotson, and Gloria Galloway from today's Globe and Mail. Stephen Harper's loud warning that voters must choose between a majority conservative government and a, quote, reckless liberal-led coalition reveals a strategy he personally conceived and is determined to emphasize throughout this election campaign. The Liberals are convinced the Tory leader is destroying his own election hopes in the process, and the Canadian voter is trying to make sense of it all, might be wondering why the second day of the election campaign was dominated by an issue the opposition is saying will never become a reality. And that's right. So Harper is saying be threatened by this coalition of wussies screwing up Canada unless he wins a majority government. And the coalition saying we agreed we wouldn't form a coalition to govern, you know, in the event of an election. So it's actually they're arguing about something that it is up to you to choose to believe. If you're on the left, you'll probably believe that Harper's a prick who's trying to scare people. And if you're on the right, you probably believe the opposition's lying on the left. And they're trying to, they do plan on secretly, forming a coalition government, a messy coalition government. And this is the type of nonsense we're debating here. That's not even debatable. It's not even true. It hasn't even happened. It is the possibility of what may happen, after the election that they're arguing about. Nothing to do with policies. Nothing to do with anything serious. We're simply supposed to get into our camps and bother each other about this nonsense. Anyway, there's more serious things going on in the world right now to get to, including the latest stuff from Japan I've been going on not enough about. So I'm going to take you to Dr. Christopher Busby on with Paul Joseph Watson on the Alex Jones Show on Friday, the 25th of March, to talk a bit more about what's going on in there and the difference between Chernobyl, which he starts talking about, and the nuclear reaction in Fukushima, Japan. And then we'll get back to holding our governments and media's feet to the fire on issues like this and more.
I would say that on the basis of the research I've done, which is quite a lot of research, and I have been working with Alexei Yablokov on this too, I would say that it's probably more than a million as a result of Chernobyl in Europe and in the ex-Soviet Union territories. So that's the first thing, and it's easy to show that. There are lots and lots of peer-reviewed papers. Now, when the United Nations and the International Atomic Energy Agency and the WHO talk, they ignore all of the scientific papers which show that there are these deaths. So they just select the numbers of scientific papers that are the ones that agree with them, and they ignore all of the others. So that's how it works. And the WHO, I have to say, signed an agreement with the International Atomic Energy Agency in 1959 to leave research on the health effects of radionuclides to the IAEA, whose remit is the development of nuclear power. So this is a terrible bias. Now, the second question. So, all right, so Chernobyl was very serious, and it caused lots of deaths. Second question is, where does Fukushima lie in this? Now, I have to say that Fukushima is probably going to be worse, although slightly different. And Fukushima is unfolding now, so we don't know the end of it. But the IAEA themselves, so they're not renowned for telling the truth or for being very direct about this, have already published in their various bulletins the levels of contamination at different distances from the Fukushima plant. It's all on the internet. You can see all this. And the latest bulletin, which was published today, says that the concentration on the ground, the contamination on the ground out to 32 kilometers, has been measured at almost 5 megabecquerels per square meter. Now, that is actually 10 times higher than the Chernobyl exclusion zone. So that's the first thing you have to say, is that out to 30 kilometers, and the Chernobyl exclusion zone is 30 kilometers, so they're strictly comparable, the Fukushima contamination is 10 times higher per square meter. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the contamination out to 78 kilometers, also published by the UN, is 1 megabecquerels per square meter, or as high as, and so that is twice as high as the level in the Chernobyl exclusion zone, where everybody was, you will recall, where the Soviet authorities, after 3 days, evacuated everybody. Now, we are now 2 weeks from the beginning of this, and people certainly haven't been evacuated in the areas where the contamination is coming down. And the reason why is because there are just too many people and there's nowhere to put them. So with Chernobyl, the nearest large area of the nearest large city was Kiev in the Ukraine. But luckily, the radiation went north and it went northwest, and so it didn't really go over Kiev to any large extent. But here we have radiation going south, and we've plotted all of this on the big computer of the NOAA, the American computer which plots particle movements. And it's quite easy to show that this stuff from Fukushima, this radioactivity from Fukushima, all these particles and the iodine and the cesium and the plutonium and the uranium and the tellurium 132 and all of these isotopes are going to Tokyo, which has a population of 36 million. As I understand it, it's the largest concentration of human beings in any city on Earth. So this is why Fukushima is so bad. First of all, there's more contamination in the area, and secondly, it's sitting right on top of a very large population center, and also, you know, of course, it will get spread around as people move away, as they drive out of the area, the airplanes fly away from Tokyo and land in other countries. People will be carrying the radioactivity with them.
The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded. Yet in holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite. It is the task of statesmanship to mold, to balance, and to integrate these and other forces, new and old, within the principles of our democratic system, ever aiming toward the supreme goals of our free society.
And that's right, folks.
Not that you care, I'm not the only one with whom these feelings I share.
We're back, and that was Dwight D. Eisenhower talking about the scientific and technological elite that is possible back in 1961 in his infamous military-industrial complex speech, where he didn't just mention the military-industrial complex as a threat, he mentioned the possible scientific technological elite funded and supported by government grants that had the possibility of taking over and manipulating policy for nefarious ends. And he was correct. And before that, Dr. Christopher Busby on the Alex Jones Show with Paul Joseph Watson talked a bit about the difference between the radiation in Chernobyl and the supposedly worse radiation emanating out of the Fukushima nuclear reactor in Japan, in the worst nuclear disaster in several years. And so I bring this stuff up to bring a little bit of context to the show and to get people updated on what's going on there, remind them to still pay attention to this issue. As it says here from Tony Cartolucci at Infowars.com from the 27th of March, when does a nuclear disaster end? Never. Those who think Japan's Fukushima disaster is today's headline and tomorrow's history need to take a good look at the Chernobyl disaster, which to this day is a continuing threat to the people of Ukraine. It will be hundreds of years before the area around the destroyed reactor is inhabitable again, and there are disputes over whether or not Chernobyl's nuclear fuel still poses a threat of causing another explosion. There's also a teetering reactor core cover and the deteriorating sarcophagus that itself may collapse and send plumes of radioactive dust in all directions. So that's right, folks. Once nuclear reactor's broken, they're almost a permanent threat. And yet, I recall Webster Griffin Tarpley, a great scholar and activist and journalist and historian and professor, PhD, summa cum laude, rogue academic badass, saying these nuclear reactors that are malfunctioning are 40-year-old Mark I reactors, and they all need significant upgrades, including ones here in North America, in Canada, and the U.S., and around the world. And so instead of scrapping nuclear power altogether, which would likely mean we wouldn't have power for most of our needs, we could simply focus on upgrading the plants to make them as safe as possible. And for people out there who say there's no such thing as safe nuclear power, look into it. There's no such thing as safe technology, period. But with respect to nuclear power, what the plan of the sort of UN Agenda 21, climate change, sustainable development, green enviro, global warming, Holocaust promoter movement, is to deprive us all of energy, to tell us all to use less, and then to stick us with the idea that we have to lower our living standards, to lower our carbon footprints, to avoid somehow changing the weather, because somehow that will be bad for the planet. Some sort of theory like that, out there. Despite the fact that carbon dioxide is less than 4% of greenhouse gases, and humans contribute only about 4% of that with all of our activity combined, a tiny fraction. The rest of it is just volcanoes erupting, or animals exhaling, fish in the sea exhaling carbon dioxide, us, and so on and so forth. Tons of tiny little plankton and little creatures doing so. So the bottom line is that this fraud has been known for some time now. You can check out the work of Professor Timothy Ball or climatedepot.com for a great updated website on what's going on with the global warming myth and the latest scrapping back and forth. But you'll see articles like one in the New York Times just the other day on why we no longer need nuclear power. And it was by a guy who was the head of Greenpeace and a former South African anti-apartheid activist, who then went to Oxford University and became a Rhodes Scholar, and now is writing op-ed pieces on why we don't need nuclear energy for the New York Times. And I read the op-ed editorial, about 1,000 words or so. A lot of emotional plays, not a lot of technically good options out there. Just a reminder that we're all screwed if we don't listen to him in a creative, careful way. And one of the reasons that I'm a bit more aware of how to take this is I know that the Rhodes Scholarships were set up to help groom prospective future leaders for the world government. And so Rhodes Scholars, by and large, like former U.S. President Bill Clinton, are in fact advocating for a world government when they do what they do, reflective of what they learned through being a Rhodes Scholar. And so people have to understand that there are people out there whose agenda is part of the bigger picture. If we don't, we're going to get stuck talking about nothing, as the Reckless Coalition for Harper article suggests here. And there's an article here from CTV.ca, CTV News from CTV Edmonton. It says here, campaigners struggle with, quote, Seinfeld election. Despite two federal party leaders visiting, this is from Jessica Earle from CTVEdmonton.ca. Despite two federal party leaders visiting the capital region in the first few days of their campaign trails, many locals say they're not inspired to head to the ballot box. And the reason, according to one local expert, is the upcoming election is a show about nothing. Just like the legendary sitcom Seinfeld supposedly was. Quote, I think citizens have picked up on what's really going on here. There is no real issue for this campaign, argued Jim Lightbody, a political scientist at the University of Alberta. They really have no idea what the election is about because it's really not about anything. They're going to be throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks. Edmontonian Jason Gardner admits he's wrestling with apathy. Quote, Seinfeld election, that is a good way to put it, he said on Sunday. I wish I was able to get more engaged into it, that's for sure, but nothing really has piqued my interest. I feel that way too, said Nancy Hoolingshead. It bothers me that the money's being spent on something that isn't going to make much of a difference. There you have it. Socially engineered apathy. And I've been talking about this happening here on the radio, on CKLN Radio, as your host BK, a.k.a. VJ, Mondays and Thursdays from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. Eastern Time, broadcasting on CKLN Radio out of Ryerson University in Toronto, Canada. I've been talking about how they are going to set us up to be bored by this election campaign instead of giving us the ability to get angry, get inspired, and to actually ask for something from prospective MPs, not simply, you know, choose which spin is better or decide not to participate in the process because we think it's being sold by the government, by the corporate media, and by other bodies as being a waste of time. Imagine if they could tell you that. Imagine if your democracy could tell you that the election that they're having, despite a lot of controversy around the current leadership of the country, is a complete waste of time. What type of massive psychological operation are we dealing with here in communist Canada, to put up with this nonsense? Quite dangerous, folks. Quite dangerous when our system can not only be unaccountable, but can say it's unaccountable, and our reaction is to shrug our shoulders and say, well, see, and then tell each other, I told you it wasn't going to make a difference. Completely insane. Why not have a list of 5 issues that we insist on them touching? As I said on Truther Girls, Sonia, shout out to the Truther Girls. You can Google Truther Girls Radio to get more of Sonia out of Montreal's work on the American Freedom Radio Network. I was on her show last Thursday, I believe. And I got to tell you, mentioned the idea of having a 5-point plan, which are five issue statement, which I'm coming up with basically, that we demand our ministers address, our prospective members of parliament address if they want our vote. Things like 9/11, of 24 Canadians that died, and it being used as a reason for our participation in the war in Afghanistan and for war on terror policies here at home. Will our MPs talk about that? Will our MPs talk about NAFTA or the Security and Prosperity Partnership or any other trade deals or international deals out there that are giving away our ability to use our resources, control our sovereignty? Will we make an issue out of the fact that we're being poisoned by genetically modified foods? Do any of these things matter out there to people? You know, or are we so determined as a country to echo the spin properly that we will determinedly say the right thing, which is that this election's BS and it's not worth it and there's nothing we can do? Is that what we're going to do here? I guess we're going to find out, because right now that's what we're being encouraged to do. This election is being seen by people as a waste of time and is being seen as the authoritative thing to say it's a waste of time. This election won't change anything, which takes a hell of a lot of pressure off the politicians in office whose job it is to provide us with what we want. So you can see how fascinating struggle right here. And there's even new policies coming out of England. This is from the UK Telegraph here, which we'll probably see here soon. Hyper injunction stops you from talking to MP. Voters being barred from speaking to their MPs under a new generation of gagging orders known as hyper injunctions, the House of Commons has been told here by Stephen Swinford from the 21st of March, UK Telegraph. Politicians criticized the injunctions as an effort, as an affront to democracy, unquote, after John Hemming, a Liberal Democrat MP, disclosed details of one on the floor of the Commons last week. These comments are protected by parliamentary privilege, which means he cannot face court proceedings revealing the injunction's existence. This month, Mr. Hemming also used the parliamentary privilege to disclose that Sir Fred Goodwin, the former chief executive of the Royal Bank of Canada, had taken out a super injunction. The hyper injunction goes a step further, Mr. Hemming told the Commons, that the order, which was obtained at the High Court in 2006, prevents an individual from saying that paint used in water tanks on passenger ships could break down and release potentially toxic chemicals. It specifically bars the person from discussing the case with, quote, members of parliament, journalists, and lawyers, unquote, along with the U.S. Coast Guard and any ship owners, and also forbids any speculation linking the chemicals in the paint with the illness of any individuals. It says, quote, the defendant must not communicate to third parties any speculation that the illness of any individual, including without limitation the collapse of H, was, has been, or will be thought out or brought out by the chemical composition or the chemicals present in the coating of the portable water tanks. So basically what they're saying here is that these journalists discovered and scientists discovered that there may be some cause for concern with the paint leaking from water tanks and poisoning people. And you can now, the people responsible for perpetuating this, the chief executive of the World Bank of Scotland, took out a super injunction, and the House of Commons and MPs can take out hyper injunctions that simply forbid you from speaking to them. And this is emanating out of England right now, so we'll probably see it here soon if we even need to. And so that's what's going on, folks. Just a little slice there. But on that note, there's a number of things we can do. Number one is get active in the information war. I'll tell you for a fact that my colleagues at PressForTruth.ca, PressForTruth.ca, Dan Dick, Steve Davies, and Brian Law, along with friends Derek Soberall from YouTube.com/TheSecretStore and TorontoG20Exposed.com, and fellow CKLN programmer Daniel Libby at SILSA, S-I-L-S-A, .ca, who also hosts Wednesday evenings, Word of Mouth Wednesdays from 7 to 8 p.m. here on CKLN Radio. All of us, along with a couple of others who joined us for part of the trip, went out on Saturday, a cold and windy, yet sunny, and in some ways nice Saturday throughout downtown Toronto. And guess what we did? Guess what a half a dozen dudes hitting the streets did? We put up posters of burning police cars all over downtown Toronto. Well, more specifically, there is a photo, a beautiful photo of a burning police car on the front of the high glossy posters and stickers advertising the new movie Into the Fire, and its premiere at the Bloor Cinema on the 22nd of April that we plastered up all over the city. And we had the cameras out, and we filmed it, and we each took turns. And then we did some streeters with a few Canadians who were very nice. Although I got to tell you, we're not as confident as we used to be. We don't have that natural inclination to want to participate in something like this. Not as much of that as we used to. And yet a few Canadians did talk to us and did express their thoughts on what happened at the G20 last year, and their thoughts on you know, what they thought, you know, should be done about it. But many of them said the same thing. What can you do? What are people supposed to do? Yes, it was terrible the way the cops acted, the way the governments acted drafting those policies, and the whole thing was a mistake. The fact that it was held here in Toronto at all, the G20 summit, and the martial law that came with it. You know, the fact that this even happened here at all was a mistake. But many of them, you know, were wondering what you could do. Well, what we did is a half a dozen guys hit the streets and put up posters in full view of hundreds and at times thousands of people in downtown Toronto. And we had a good time doing it. And then we stopped off for some lovely, warm Vietnamese pho soup, which we desperately needed after a cold day of trekking around. And it was, all in all, it was a lot of fun. It was rewarding. And I strongly recommend it. And this is also why I put it on guys more to fight the infowar than I do on ladies. Even though they magically somehow wear less than guys do in the cold weather, if they're going out to a nightclub or sometimes even in general, not wanting to ruin their lovely hair with a toque and so on. The real idea of trekking around with cameras, with posters, and with flyers in adverse conditions, possibly being confronted by members of your law enforcement, you know, possibly trying to do goofy things like stand on top of newspaper boxes to slap posters and stickers up really high. That's something that guys can engage in if they were so inclined and enjoy more, I think, than many women can. Although, for God's sakes, ladies, you live here too, and you're getting messed with something fierce. So I strongly recommend you find ways to get active in the information war as well. But I definitely think all men in this country, age 25 to 45, should man up on behalf of women, children, and the elderly. And it's important. Give them a little bit more personal space. Take some damn responsibility. When it's late at night, be aware of the fact that they may be understandably paranoid about you as a stranger if you're a dude. And then act accordingly. Give them a little nod. You know, let them know you're cool. You're not the type of dude that's going to pose any sort of threat to them. Because at the end of the day, all of those micro actions will lead to reinforcing your role as a male in this society, and that will help you get your co-jones back. It won't be buying a pair of Dockers khaki pants like the ads at the mall there suggest. It'll be something much, much different. And so I strongly recommend that out there, and they will react in a positive way. They will appreciate the fact that you're trying to make that kind of effort on their behalf. Don't worry about all the politically correct crap. It doesn't last long, not in today's environment. It was used to suppress us. It was used to destroy our confidence. It was used to make white people feel incredibly guilty all the time and incredibly afraid of what to say all the time and incredibly afraid of asking questions and speaking naturally all the time. And now we got a bunch of emasculated white people in this damn country. We got an election that's about nothing after having a prime minister who was so recklessly out of control that his election was preceded by being held in contempt of parliament, and he still has a chance to win. That's the type of bizarre political paradigm we are operating under here in Canada in the 21st century. And so it's important to recognize that. And there's tons and tons of things you can do out there. There's a great video by Luke Radowski of wearechange.org. Go to youtube.com/wearechange. It says here, just keep going. You've got nothing to lose. And I had a phenomenal experience watching this movie. I was at my colleague Dan Dix, the owner of PressForTruth.ca, Press for Truth, the director of the new film Into the Fire, along with Steve Davies and Brian Law, premiering at the Bloor Cinema April 22nd. It's $10 tickets. You can go to conspiracyculture.com or PressForTruth.ca to get your tickets and support the filmmakers, the journalism company, and the film and the cause. But I was at his place, and he was telling me, you got to see this video. And the video is called Just Keep Going, You Got Nothing to Lose. And it is a visibly depressed and isolated Luke Radowski, who's going through some controversy with some of his fellow We Are Change members in New York, on a subway. I'm posing the question, you know, he says, we're all on a subway and we're all, you know, kind of faceless and quiet and a little nervous about being in such close proximity and not talking. So he decided to talk to these people. And there's an incredibly moving, haunting video. Again, youtube.com/wearechange. Just keep going. You got nothing to lose is the title of the video by Luke Radowski, where he interviewed normal people on the New York subway who agreed to be interviewed or who, when asked, recommended somebody else in the subway for Luke to talk to with his camera to get a few thoughts in the world. Open-ended questions. What does love mean to you? What does freedom mean to you? You know, what are you motivated by, fear or love? You know, and then eventually getting into the harder stuff. You know, do you trust government? You know, if people would go that far. And what's amazing is the humanity of people confronted in this manner by the sincere young world-renowned activist Luke Radowski and the answers they gave. Absolutely brilliant, especially when you consider this guy has, in the information war, through his actions, through hosting giant rallies, leading crowds of hundreds of people through the streets in New York, at times even thousands, and being a celebrated and iconic figure in the truth movement, you get a sense of what his competition is, which is the mindsets of people around him who cannot or will not process this information because so many of their concerns are more than they can handle. When your own life feels like it's more than you can handle, then you don't feel like handling, you know, anything else and anybody else's issues. And yet, if you don't handle other people's issues, if you don't feel like you can handle the big picture, then guess what you're stuck with? Your problems feeling overwhelming. If you take on the big picture, if you feel empowered enough to help other people handle their problems and not just say, you know, oh, really, that's too bad for you, but actually say, here's some options. I am sorry for you, but I have a clear head and I'm a step removed from the issue you're dealing with. So let me use my clear head to think of some options here. And so you get a sense of the absolute humanity and vulnerability of these humble, perfect strangers on the New York subway system from this video. So I strongly recommend you check it out to connect with it. The end of the video, there's a little funny part tacked on, which I didn't like very much. And Dan even stopped the video after the emotional part to leave the emotional wallop. So I recommend doing that after you see it. It's about 12 minutes long. Stop it before the last 30 seconds or minute or so with the outro sort of funny joke. But the bottom line is that that doesn't take away from the rest of it. Although, see, in our culture, we're encouraged to take the edge off anything serious we say. Crack a joke, you know, make it silly, make it seem like it's not that big a deal. Take the pressure off people. And I got to tell you something. It may be polite in certain circumstances, but it also habitually destroys our ability to handle it. Give me one sec here. I'm going to pull this phone call up on air. Good morning, caller. You are on the air.
Hey, good morning, BBK. How are you?
Good. And yourself, sir?
I'm good. Sorry that I missed most of your show this morning, but I catching the tail end here, so I will be quick. This election, they are pushing two things. I noticed that a coalition is somewhat bad, even though the mother of all democracies in England, they are being run by a coalition government. So where we get our system from, they can do it, but somehow we, the child, it's bad. And the second thing is the cost of the election. I have never known an election which doesn't cost money, so I don't know why that is an issue. Is this election costing any less than the election in 1995 or 2004 or 2006? What's the issue here? So those are the two bogeyman issues that they have put out instead of talking about accountability of a government per se. So that was my two points I wanted to push out there.
Brilliantly done, sir. I want to thank you for that. Anything else to add?
No, just that I'm sorry that I missed you this morning because I was on the highway and my radio conked out on me because it was so damn cold. But anyway, I always love listening to you, even though we disagree on certain things. But the core is that we have the same vision, my friend.
I appreciate that, sir, and I hope we still can disagree on certain things, because if we weren't able to, the world would be a much more boring place. So I want to thank you for your call this morning.
Take care, my friend. Enjoy.
Best of luck on the drive, sir. Thank you.
You too. Ciao.
And that was one of the callers. He's called in here before, and he's a talented, intelligent individual who's hooked us up with a couple of tips here. Forget the gentleman's name. But the bottom line is, folks, that I think he's absolutely right. This election is about whether or not a coalition government's a good idea. Should power be diffused like that with checks and balances, where the none of them gets too out of control and too autocratic because there are other parties there stopping them, or the cost of this damn election, like, is a waste of $300 million. Like, the government doesn't waste our money all the time, and the only issue they make a big deal out of is one fundamental to our political process and holding them accountable. Last call, and then I gotta go. But all right, let's try this. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? I just wanted to ask, because everyone's talking about getting involved and everything around the city, and you're just talking about the G20 posters, and I just wanted to ask how do we get involved, especially with 5 weeks to the election, because I want to get involved and want to actually say something, and I just want to know, is there emails, is there people to talk to, things like that, because this is a big joke now with the election and the minority governments, and it's getting frustrating.
I couldn't agree more, caller. There are several groups that I recommend: TorontoTruthSeekers.com, PressFORTruth.ca, and so on. But to be honest with you, what I do is I just do it myself. I just go out there. I drop off a bunch of flyers with some information on it, and I try and get it networked. You can go to my website, whatyouwanttobelievein.com. And if you are truly serious about this, if anybody out there listening is truly serious about affecting these elections, exposing how much BS is being shoved down our throats, break me off an email at vijay.sarma@gmail.com or blackkrishna@gmail.com, or go to whatyouwanttobelievein.com for my contact information. And I am totally willing to hit the streets with anybody out there who wants to and suggest the best ways to reach our fellow Canadians to give them a damn chance against this snow job. So that's my recommendation. I wish I knew more groups who were sort of ready and willing to get active on these issues. I also know the Canadian Action Party is gearing up for this election, so you can check out CanadianActionParty.ca as well. Any other thoughts?
Nope, that's all. I appreciate it. That's what I wanted to hear, because I wanted to get out there and I want everyone to be able to get involved.
Fantastic. Thank you, caller.
Much appreciated.
And so that's great. I think Canadians are genuinely ticked off about this, those that know any better. So if we show it, then we can encourage our fellow Canadians to feel the same way, and that wouldn't be a bad idea. So tons and tons of issues out there, folks, but I'm going to let you go because the People's DJ, Mr. David James, about to take you on a four-hour jazz experience. You will not forget. He is smooth. He is talented. He is a jazz genius. You got to stick around because on a cold, crabby day, if you have the opportunity to take your mind off it with some great music, then Mr. David James is one of the guys in the world to turn to do that as a pro DJ himself. We are lucky at CKLN Radio to have him and so many others here on the station doing a fantastic job. Hopefully you enjoyed this show today. Just a couple of websites to shout out before I go. Infowars.com for a great overview of things going on in the world. ConspiracyCulture.com, a book and DVD store at Queen and Roncesvalles, where Patrick, I'm sure, will have some updates on the election feed. Naturalnews.org for amazing health information. VRAN.org, legal vaccine exemption forum. SeedsOfDeception.com for info on genetically modified foods. You can go to FluorideAlert.org for more information on the risks of fluoride. Get a water filter and then get politically active with our city council to get it out. And take care of them damn helicopters buzzing this damn city as well. I can't believe people in condos are putting up with helicopters buzzing by their $300,000 condos at all crazy hours of the night and not realizing, you know, they shouldn't have to put up with this type of nonsense. Nobody should. We shouldn't have to put up with this type of nonsense in our city. So if it happens here, let's make sure we find the people who are responsible, or who should be, or the people who should be responsible for finding out who's responsible. And if our city council has to call the transportation authorities at the federal level who are responsible for air traffic control in this city, then by all means, let's encourage them to do that. Press FORTruth.ca. Again, the screening of the new film Into the Fire, premiering at the Bloor Cinema April 22nd, 2011. Tickets are $10. Go to PressFORTruth.ca for more details. Check out and share the new trailer. And download and print off and pass out the posters and flyers made available by Dan Dixon, Press for Truth, to help promote the film and remind people of what exactly is going on in this country. We can't have an election, a federal election, about nothing when we just had martial law in this country a few months ago. We cannot allow this type of nonsense to go on. TorontoTruthSeekers.com, great place to network on these issues. They were partially responsible for helping set up the PFT, Press for Truth, postering, flyering campaign efforts that we had on Saturday. So definitely TorontoTruthSeekers.com is an option. But regardless, my website is whatyouwanttobelievein.com, because ultimately, as a Canadian, you want to believe in your own efforts. If you don't believe in you, no one else will believe in you. So figure out what you want to believe in. And if it's yourself, make sure you act on it. And if you act on it, other Canadians will have the confidence to take what you've done seriously and act on it themselves as well. So that's enough for me, folks. I am out of here. I wish you all the best luck on a cold day in Toronto or wherever you are. Be safe. Take care of each other this week. Get active on these issues. Start talking some mess about the system, and then maybe the media will have the opportunity to spit out some better info for us, and that we'll all get better results from our political process than we're currently being offered. I hope we do, folks. Hope we take advantage of it. And until Thursday, peace out.